Blog Talk Radio.
That you know of.
We just had this conversation. Today was the unknown Father's Day. Tomorrow's the known Father's Day.
Tony, your guest has arrived. Why don't you introduce him?
All righty. Buddy mine here in town, Sarasota, Florida. His name is Anthony Colarossi. Very, very awesome dude that I happened to meet through work that is a big boxing fan. Come to find out that he was an actual, I believe, pro boxer. He definitely sparred with people like Arturo Gatti and some others up in Brooklyn. And he's actually training down here in Sarasota at a gym, at a local gym that we're trying to beef up a little bit on the air here. He's got some prospects that will be coming through here to be on the show. So I'd like to introduce Anthony Colarossi to the show tonight.
I want to thank you guys very much for having me on the show.
Hey, buddy. Pleasure. I'm glad you could make it. I just want to talk a little bit about you know, your background in boxing, where you started, some of those people we had spoke about you were up and coming with, and in Brooklyn and so forth.
Well, absolutely. Actually, originally from the Bronx, and the days of growing up in the Bronx, then moving up to Yonkers, New York, and actually how I got started into boxing. I moved up from Yonkers, and Chaz Parmentieri, his dad was an amateur fighter and actually got me into boxing as a young kid and watching training in the garage in Yonkers, New York. And as I got older in my days, teenager days, 20s, trained with Zip Green in the Yonkers PAL, Morris Park Gym in the Bronx, and fought in the 1994 I've Golden Gloves. Fought a Metro champion, David Navarro. Great fight. 3-1 as an amateur. Trained with Doug DeCobe DeWitt, which was he's a great champion and helped me out on training and my career. And also the Yonkers PAL was definitely a great place to help kids get off the street. Was great friends with Arturo Gatti. Times in Jersey City. Trained with Arturo, Dave Telesco from Port Chester, New York, that fought Roy Jones Jr. as a time when I was an amateur, and I used to spar with Larry Barnes, No Fair Barnes, 3 years times when he fought Felix Trinidad and Glenwood Brown and Yuri Boy Compass. So it was an honor actually to be in the ring with them at the time when I was an amateur, moving around with these pro guys, and I've learned so much from these great fighters and gentlemen.
That's awesome. Now you brought down basically all your talent to Sarasota, Florida, and then you're currently training in a gym in Sarasota with some people. I know there's some up and coming boxers that are making their way up through the ranks. I know it's a little slow in the Sarasota area. It's more St. Pete and Tampa, but can you tell us a little bit about the gym in Sarasota and your prospects and some people around here you're dealing with and how we can help out?
Absolutely. I train at Venom, a great guy. Darren was from Jersey, super middleweight, got a great program in Nokomis, Osprey in Sarasota. And there's a few people in there, probably a welterweight, 56. Not so many prospects here in Sarasota, but if I do find somebody, I love to help them and knowledge them and bring my style from New York and my knowledge to help out that anyone that wants to succeed and move farther in their career. And I do also help out at people at YMCA Core and to help them whatever to reach their goals and their talent. So it's truly an honor to put my love and passion to something that I love and to help people succeed their goals in life.
Excellent. You got any stories of the boxers, these pro boxers that you've dealt with here or anyone around town? Or
There's a few guys. There's one guy that I was working with. His name was Glenn. He's a 147 pounder that I was working with. He's to the point where that if he wants to, he doesn't know exactly what he wants to do, if he wants to fight amateur or pro. So it's kind of like in the rears right now, what he wants to do. And then I have a guy that's 165, this guy Joe I'm working with at 165, super middleweight. So I'm working with him right now to see what he wants to do, if he wants to enter in the gloves. And these two guys that I'm really, really working on to try to help whatever they want to do and succeed.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we'll be able to beef up Venom Jim here on the air a little bit and get the Sarasota boxing, you know, through the roof
anything
in this town. And
core. Absolutely.
Anything we can do to help, you know, drop any one of us a line. But any other guys have any questions for Anthony? Nope. Well, I'll tell you what. We've got a couple fights we're going to be talking about tonight. So before you take off, because I definitely want to get you back on the air more often, we got Errol Spence and Crawford coming up here soon. Which way are you leaning on that one? Because I noticed the other day Vegas has got Crawford as the main man.
Styles make fights, brother. I'll be truthfully honest with you. I have Spence. You know, styles make fights. Spence, you know, not because he's the bigger guy and the quality of opponents that Spence fought, I think were much better opponents that he fought prior before and then handed over to Crawford. So Spence is, to me, much more fundamentally more sound. Physically, I think, stronger man. I definitely think that Spence, will definitely take this fight. Everyone's picking Crawford. I got Spence though.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if Vegas is doing it to make some money or how they're doing it, but I think Errol Spence
absolutely
will pull it off.
I totally agree with you, Tony.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we have a caller. Go ahead, Lero.
Hey, no, it's Milo.
Oh, Milo.
Lero.
Hey, you guys hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to, you know, I knew my friend Anthony was going to be on the show tonight, so I just wanted to call in and, you know, just, you know, tell you a little bit about our history. I grew up with Anthony in Yonkers, and, you know, he's a little bit older than me, and, you know, he was always a great guy. I myself loved the, you know, the fight game. I love boxing, and his conversations, you know, about boxing, always very interesting. But, you know, a lot more to say about Anthony, you know, I mean, other than the guy's a great father. I mean, you know, I cannot say, you know, the good things about this guy. I mean, he's just an absolutely great guy. I love his dedication just as a person in this world. I remember back in the day I had my own issues with, you know, substance abuse and all of that. And I remember driving around in the morning and I would see Anthony 7 in the morning running up hills and training. And I used to say to myself, damn, I got to be a little bit more like that guy, you know?
The Rocky Balboa of Sarasota now.
Yeah. And I got to say, too, I agree. I was listening in about Errol Spence and Crawford. I think what Anthony said, everything he said was right on the money. He's more fundamentally sound. He's a bigger guy. The quality of opponents, he's fought a lot better fighters, the way I think he's been tested more. And he's got the edge. And like Anthony said, styles make fights. And I think Crawford, I think Spence would win that fight, you know?
Absolutely. I'll throw one more at you here before we got to take off, but there's talks about possibly Tank Davis taking another fight with Isaac Cruz, which was the one that he got kind of at the last minute fight deal with here before Garcia and all that. Do you guys recommend that fight? And if so, which way would you lean on it?
Tony, I roll with Tank. Tank to me is a miniature Mike Tyson. When he gets close enough to you with those short, compact punches, the guy is extremely explosive. And when anytime you have a guy like that that gets compact, I mean, you clearly seen when he fought Garcia, I told everyone that Tank was going to beat. Even though Garcia is talented, but he was not ready yet. And he closed the gap and he just was incredible. And when he gets close enough on you, I think he'll wind up stopping. I think he'll wind up stopping him again in a rematch.
Well, we have sandwiches we eat on this program, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think anybody in that weight class could beat Tank. I think he's pound for pound. He's got to be definitely top 3 fighters in the world. I knew he would easily beat Garcia. I didn't think Garcia was all that to begin with. I think it's going to be a long time before we see Tank Davis lose.
I got to disagree with you on that one.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And Lilo, thank you for the love, brother. I appreciate it.
Yep.
My pleasure, my friend. I love you, bro. Keep up.
I'm going to have Zito and Ty.
Thank you for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay. You got it, buddy. Thank you. We're going to have our other guys pipe up on this one, too, real quick.
Have a good night.
Go ahead, Z.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for coming on the show. Second of all, I want to chime in on the first fight you guys talked about, Crawford and Spence one. First thing I do want to say is this. I'm sort of ashamed because you go and these guys, to me, should have been active. Like, we've been waiting for this fight, and while you're waiting for the big fights, guys are usually active. So to me, are we honestly getting the best Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence? To be honest, are we getting the best version? Because when you have a guy who's inactive, or guys who are inactive like that, they aren't honing their skills to me. That said, you know, that they're fighting each other, and it's going to be an interesting matchup. For me, I think, and I can't predict an exact winner right now, but everything hinges on two things to me. And the first thing is, how much hell can Crawford catch early? How much can he withstand early? And the second thing is, can Errol Spence get up? Errol Spence is a workhorse. It is hard. Two guys right now in boxing with the names that are hard to bag rounds on are Devin Haney and Errol Spence. It's hard to get rounds on these guys. These guys, they do work that you know, they do work good to the judges, and they're consistent. They're in so much good shape, and they're very, you know, they're very on key with their game. With that said, he makes slight adjustments, but he's not the biggest adjuster. What he does works well for him through the course of the fight. Crawford's a lot different. Crawford will adjust. Crawford's main thing is once he finds that bead on you, it's hard to survive him. It's hard to survive him, especially as he's going into his welterweight. He's been pretty good. I think Jeff Horn's the only one he didn't stop. With that said, he is the smaller guy, and Errol Spence is, you know, he's going to work. He's going to work to the head. He's going to work to the body. I think Crawford might have the reach advantage, although he's a smaller guy. So that may play the factor. But if Crawford is capable when he finds the bead on Errol Spence, the fighter is going to get really interesting to me. But that's my take on it.
Much
Ty, what
assessment.
Do you think? Ty?
Hey, gentlemen, please forgive me. I've been traveling, so just a little offbeat here. How's everyone doing first and foremost?
Good.
Excellent.
Doing good. Happy Father's Day.
Good. So you were talking about Crawford Spence?
Yeah. Yes, we are.
Yes, sir. Yep. So Zito is right in that Crawford does have a reach advantage. Had this fight been made a few years ago, I might have seen it differently. Right now, without going into an in-depth prediction, but just right now, my gut leans towards Crawford. As even though being 3 years older than Errol Spence, I view him as a fresher fighter. He hasn't quite had the wars that Errol Spence has had. The big thing, too, is the Errol Spence thing outside the ring. Crawford outside the ring has historically been a little bit more disciplined. You know, Errol's had he's had two car accidents, one bad, and he's had a detached retina. So I just don't know if, I mean, he's a strong-willed guy, but I don't know if at this point he is going to be able to possess the durability to stand up to Crawford once, as Zito said, Crawford starts to find his beat on him.
Mm-hmm. Caden?
I haven't watched much of Errol Spence, but I watched, what was the last Crawford fight? Because I believe I watched that one.
I got up.
Does anybody know who he fought last?
No.
He fought David Avanesian, and he knocked him out in the sixth round.
Oh yeah, I believe I did see that. It was a nice knockout, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
He knocked him out cold in the sixth round. Knocked him out cold.
Yeah. I'm definitely leaning on my boy Crawford here, just because that's the only guy I've seen fight. But he looked like he's gonna keep up the intensity and like you were saying, rhythm. He had that crazy rhythm. His hands were just flowing.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Bob. Bob, what do you think about Amanda Nunes and her last outing?
Well, Miss Nunes, the all-time goat of the female with only, two losses to her entire career, which one was I can't think of it right now. And then the last one was to Pena recently. Yeah, well, the most recent was to Pena. I can't remember who the first one was. But, Zingano. Okay, so, yeah, Nunes pretty much going out as pretty much the GOAT. She was slotted to fight Pena again, but something happened there. And then she got, who was her opponent? Mexican fighter, let's see here, boom. There we go. Thank you. I love having Caden back on and Ty. You guys just helped me out. But anyway, so she dominated that fight. Her opponent landed pretty much a good, maybe I think it was a right early in the rounds. But then Nunes just kind of dominated the whole thing and won by decision and then put up for her retirement, wants to go out on top with only two losses on her career. Focus on her family and stuff. So good for her. Hopefully she'll get to roll off onto like some movies and some other stuff. I would have liked to seen her go against Pena again, but hats off to Nunes and an amazing, amazing career. She'll definitely get inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. God bless Miss Nunes and her family. Excellent
that
fighter.
That last fight was almost like of her career. You know, she had more total strikes that fight than her opponent. She had more significant strikes than her opponent. She had more ground control than her opponent. She had more takedowns than her opponent. She had more takedown attempts than her opponent. She probably sweat less than her opponent, too, which is the story of her career. She said that's why she's the greatest female fighter of all time. And I believe she's the only female fighter in UFC history to become double champ, and she is one of only four fighters to ever do so. And just and that alone should just stand for itself, testament to her greatness. But her last fight was no different, but definitely a big surprise. I wasn't really expecting her to go in there in the tie. I thought she was at least going to run it with Shevchenko one more time before she retired. But
that's where I stand. That right there is where I stand. Amanda Nunes. She's easily a quick Hall of Fame, inducted. She's one of the greatest female fighters ever. Is she the best? I think that that lady that she beat twice by decision may have something to say about that, Ms. Valentina. Because me personally, I think she might be the best female UFC fighter ever. But that's just my opinion.
Okay.
Ty? Well, if you're talking about the best and the greatest, right, like if you're talking about the best and the greatest, I guess it depends how you measure things up. Wasn't surprised that Amanda Nunes retired. She had been speaking about it openly. She actually said she considered retiring right after she lost to Julia Pena. She was getting to that point, and I think most people who kind of know that she's really into raising her family right now and more so wanting to, fall back, raise the family, and coach. So it wasn't a surprise she was retired. Do I think she's the greatest female fighter of all time?
I'm kind of along the lines with Zito. I think she's one of them. I think I think there's no way historically that you can argue against her to a certain extent. You know what I mean? Because she has the historical accomplishments to justify being called the greatest female fighter of all time. I kind of like Zito, still think that maybe, you know, it could be Shevchenko. Because, again, Amanda just barely got by Shevchenko twice, and she's the far bigger girl. So when you talk pound for pound greatest, I guess it just depends on your particular personal scale. But, yeah,
tell me,
she's absolutely anyone who says she's the greatest female fighter of all time will never get an argument from me, not until someone can eclipse some of the records and accolades she's acclaimed.
And I want to ask both y'all, if they were to fight and that were to be the storybook ending to possibly both of their careers, who do you think comes out on top in that last fight?
You know what? I always favor Amanda because Amanda's just she's just a bigger girl. Amanda fought comfortably. Remember, Amanda knocked out Cyborg, who also has an argument for being one of the greatest female fighters of all time. But Amanda knocked her out at 145. Shevchenko was outsized at 135. So 145 is like out the question to her. And Amanda Nunes can't make 125 where Shevchenko's at. In fact, part of the issue Amanda was having was saying that the weight cut to 135 is so hard for her. But she's just such a bigger girl that to me, the fact that kind of like, you know what? I'll give you a perfect example, Caden. I look at the Shevchenko-Nunes fight and rivalry kind of like I look at Volkanovski and Makhachev. Volkanovski lost that fight, but he's clearly the smaller guy, and he gave him everything he could handle. And so everyone, all you guys were like, yo, man, Volkanovski's the dude. He's still pound for pound number one because he took a guy who's the great bigger guy, you know, down to the wire. Shevchenko did it twice with Nunes, and she got closer the second time. So I don't know. Depends on, again, it all depends on your scale.
Yeah. That is a great way to put it.
Good. All right, Bob, it's going to go to Anthony, or Tony, rather. What do you think? Deontay Wilder is going through all the rags lately, believes that Alexander Usyk is afraid of him. True or false?
That's completely false.
Yeah, Usyk's not afraid of anybody. Usyk, you know, obviously, Usyk, as the champ with three belts, knowing Tyson Fury is the, you know, the bigger guy, when they went to negotiate, Usyk didn't want to give Fury an excuse to not take the fight. Usyk walked in, and Fury said, I want 70-30, a 70-30 split. And Usyk said, okay. Fury's like, I want this size ring. And Usyk was like, okay. Usyk wants the smoke. He's not afraid of anybody. But what Usyk also wants to do is be able to keep his titles. And thus, it looks like he's going to be fighting Daniel Dubois, who is his mandatory. With three belts, they do kind of a rotating thing. And so Daniel Dubois is the guy who's up first. So he's going to, you know, be looking to defend his titles.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to add, I think Usyk would fight Wilder for free if he could. Yeah, so is being scared of him? Absolutely not. I love Wilder.
Well, Usyk, I mean, you're at that level, you're not scared of anybody. Nobody's afraid of anybody. With that said, Usyk wants to make money. He wants to make money, and right now, Tyson Fury is the money man. He's the money man. So when he's the money man, you know, you're going to go after him. You know, right now, Deontay Wilder's not as much on Usyk's rating. Yeah, so Usyk kind of, he gets to kind of pick and choose. So at the moment, he's more focused on Tyson Fury.
Yeah. Okay. Like I was saying, you know, with Alexander Usyk, The only thing that supersedes the mandatory is a unification fight. And so the mandatory straps, I forget what three he has, but they were going to allow the Fury unification to happen. Once that, the negotiations fell through, then one of the belts enforced their mandatory. So Usyk, you know, has to fight Deontay, or has to fight Daniel Dubois. That's his first scheduled mandatory. The only thing that would supersede that would be if he were to go ahead and kick things up with Tyson Fury. So if he were to go ahead and fight Wilder, he would be stripped of his belt. So there's just no reason for him to – it's not in his position or in his best interest to fight Wilder right now, not unless it's a voluntary defense, which I'm sure he would do. But right now he's about, you know, his draft. And getting that undisputed. He was undisputed at cruiserweight. He wants to be undisputed at heavyweight.
And you see Usyk fighting the bigger opponents. You know, even the last couple of years he's been fighting the bigger opponents. He fought Joshua not once but twice and won both of them.
I think right now, honestly, I think there's no one beating Usyk. I think he's just too technical, and I think he's a great, great technician. I think he's a very well-rounded, balanced fighter.
You know, Usyk, as much as I agree with that, I have to, you know what, Usyk, as good as he is, you're dealing with the heavyweight division. Simple as that. And Deontay Wilder has a shot against everybody. Everybody. Tyson Fury is big, and he's also very good. So he has a shot against everybody. Usyk, right now, as far as the top guys, Usyk, he dealt with Joshua. I don't want to say easily, but he dealt with him handily. I don't know if he's going to be able to deal with either one of those other two guys handily. I don't know if he wins or loses, but you know, that's not a guarantee to me.
No, I agree with you, but, you know, styles make fights, you know. It's like I can fight you, and then you can fight Tony, and then fight another guy, but I can beat you, but I can't beat Tony, but you can beat Tony. So I think a lot has to do with style. I agree with you. Deontay Wilder has a puncher's chance, but he doesn't know how to throw a jab. I mean, he's got to start learning. If he had a jab behind that devastating right hand, oh, he'd be deadly. I wish he worked on his jab when Lennox Lewis was trying to help him. You know, if he had a jab like a Larry Holmes or Carl Detroit Williams, he'd be deadly. I mean,
he's deadly without a jab. He's deadly without a jab.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, the problem is a lot of these fighters now, the problem is a lot of these trainers, they're not like Ray Arcel anymore, Emmanuel Stewart. These guys were the students of the game. And, I mean, look at Emmanuel Stewart's son. I mean, literally did with Tyson Fury. And he turned him into a way much better fighter. He learned from his dad. And Emmanuel Stewart was a great, great trainer. And I just think a lot of these fighters now, to me, the jab is everything. The jab sets everything up. It is. And I watch a lot of these fighters now, very few. No one uses the jab anymore. The jab sets everything up. It really does. And I think if Wilder, he's a great athlete. He's the type of guy you can put in a basketball court. He could shoot the ball. He can do this. He's a great athlete. But I wish he would work on that jab more. He would be so much deadly with that lethal power that he has. He'd be incredible. I really like him. I wish the best for him.
I'm going to kind of double down and absolutely concur what you say and double down on it. I really like Wilder, too. I wouldn't want him to beat Usyk. Usyk's my favorite guy. And it's a dangerous fight for Usyk, right? All these big guys are dangerous for Usyk. Wilder's specifically dangerous because he's so dynamic and pretty quick, especially quick for the heavyweight with long right hand. The issue, though, is, as you say, with Wilder, he doesn't have a great jab. And I double down on that by not only agreeing with you, but he just doesn't have a great lead hand or lead hand usage whatsoever. So
correct.
In addition to having, you know, I would say subpar footwork outside of being able to maintain distance occasionally, he doesn't have great usage of his lead hand, be it a jab, check, left hook, or anything of that nature. So with Usyk being a southpaw and constantly trying to turn his opponent, Deontay doesn't have the jab to steady him or the hook to deter him. So for me, that's the fight that Usyk wins that fight hands down unless he gets caught with something. Tyson Fury is a different challenge altogether just because of the size and the versatility of the guy. So
I agree with you. I agree. I think when you're fighting a southpaw, I fought David Navarro. I fought in the gloves in the southpaw. I mean, and even in the amateurs and the games, a lot of guys get away with, you know, with these fights that on their book and say they have 8 fights when they have 10, 12 fights. This guy was experienced southpaw. And when you're fighting a southpaw, you got to move to your left and use your jab a lot and throw right hands or left hook. If you can't do that, you're in trouble. And if you got a great jab and moving to your left and pawing, even if you pull that jab out like Floyd, confuse him, lead right hands and left hooks, you got checkmate. He's good, you know. But I just think that Fury, and he just – he's a big man. And big man, what, 6'9", if I'm not mistaken, guys?
Yes, sir.
Tyson
yes,
Fury?
Sir.
Oh,
yes, 6'9".
He's a man that's so elusive. He's a beast. And you got a big guy like that leaning on you. And it's just so difficult having a big man like that, that is tactical, too. That's a problem.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Absolutely agree, sir.
Okay. Hey, Gene, let's go to the other side of the coin right now for Charles Oliveira. He had a hell of a TKO on his last bout. What do you think of that? Caden, you there?
My bad. The whole thing was on mute while I was talking. I had a whole sentence, and I looked down at my phone, and it's still on mute. But I don't know if y'all saw the fight, but that sequence that led up.
I saw it, brother Caden.
Oh my God, that was so clean. That was beautiful. I've never seen Charles Oliveira move his hips and move his hands like that before. It was like I was watching a whole, you know, reborn striker version of Charles Oliveira. I was a very happy camper watching that fight. But does it give me confidence that he can go and beat Islam? We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that sequence when he threw that I believe it was a left high kick straight to oh my gosh, that almost hit my head. Beneil Dariush, right? When he threw that kick to Beneil Dariush and he turned him around, kinda got him dazed a little bit looking around, and he kinda just went straight in for the kill there. You know, led him with those two lead jabs and going in for the big right hook that followed them. Dropping him to the canvas, you know, controlling him while he's down there, and then ultimately leading to the TKO. Oh, my. Oh, my. We're looking at a whole new animal when it comes to striking in him. But, yeah, does that give me confidence that he can go and beat Islam Makhachev? That's where I'm torn. I don't know. Because, yeah, he looks good, but his striking looks good. We didn't see any improvisation to his grappling. We didn't see any improvisation to his ground game. We didn't see any of that. But we did see, you know, what was his fault? What was his fault when he fought Islam? He threw that flying knee that ultimately led to him getting knocked out. That was his downfall. So maybe he could be a little bit smarter with his striking. Not just throw a flying knee out of nowhere and get absolutely right hooked by a wrestler. But can he improve against Islam Makhachev next time around, and can he win? That is the big question. And Bob, what do you think?
Well, I didn't get to see it. So, yeah, I mean, Oliveira has always been a great fighter. You know, his ground game was better than his stand-up. So if he's improving there, that's fantastic. But I did not get to see the fight, so I apologize.
Okay. Todd, hey, we have a caller. What's your question? Caden?
What's that?
Caden, what was your question?
Oh, I was asking, how do y'all think Charles Oliveira can match up against Islam Makhachev next fight? That was a question towards Tyra Zito.
I don't think he's going to match up too well. Oliveira, but I think Islam may be just a little too deep water. Even though Oliveira, he's good swimming, I just think I think Islam right now, I think is more or less his time, you know, compared to Oliveira.
Before Islam fought Oliveira the first time, what I had noted, and you know, Oliveira's three biggest performances, right? The Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandler fights. What I had noted was that he was getting clipped in the striking, but nobody went down with him. The guy that came closest to beating him was Michael Chandler, because Michael Chandler was the only guy who dove down into his guard. And I thought that if Makhachev got him to the ground, he wouldn't be afraid to go to the ground with him. So that still stands. Makhachev will not be afraid to go to the ground with him. He won't have a problem taking Charles Oliveira down. And when he's down there, he's probably going to control positions pretty much. So those things still stand. But Caden made a very, very, I think, very valid and intelligent point in that I thought Oliveira would beat Beneil Dariush, but I didn't think he'd run through him like that. And what looked impressive was his striking was cleaner. Charles Oliveira is always aggressive as far as his striking, but his eyes look better defensively in the pocket. He seemed to be able to see better what was coming at him. It could have been because of Beneil's style or, you know, whatever, but he just seemed to be able to see defensively in the pocket a little better than he had before. And if his striking is cleaner, then that makes his fight with Makhachev a tougher fight for Islam. And the reason being is because if he can take advantage in the striking, because I always thought he was the better striker, he just gets clipped more. If he can go ahead and outstrike Islam and make Islam panic wrestle, then it becomes a little easier to go ahead and catch him in a submission. So if his striking was clean and it wasn't just the opponent, then I think it's a tougher fight, I think. I still lean towards Islam, but I think it's a much tighter fight.
And a big note is that Charles Oliveira did not get clipped one time in that entire fight. And
nope.
I forget who said it, but you know, you were saying that when Islam knocked Charles Oliveira down in that first fight, that was just the start of the end. The real thing that ended it is Islam not being afraid and jumping straight into top mount immediately and getting that arm triangle in seconds. People should be doing. And that's what it takes. You know, you pit greatness against greatness, fire against fire. You see, that was happening with Israel Adesanya. When Israel Adesanya was on top of the world, coasting through everybody, you know, what was he doing? No one was approaching him. No one wanted to get into his guard. No one wanted to get close.
What I also saw against Volkanovski,
came along and knocked him out. And you saw the same with Islam Makhachev against Charles Oliveira.
And think about this, Caden. And think about this real quick, Caden. I love Makhachev, but when we saw Makhachev fight Volkanovski, there were a few times, specifically in that last round where he got tired, where he tried to panic wrestle. And if you panic wrestle against Charles Oliveira, he's going to wrap you up in the guillotine and put you to sleep. So,
definitely. He doesn't make mistakes. He feeds off of mistakes.
Hey, guys, we have a caller online, Chris. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing good.
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
It's okay. I'm listening to your show. I'm very interested. I like what you guys are talking about. UFC, though, that's a different game than boxing. Very out of nowhere, you could, like you were saying before, you could give the guy a jumping kick and or a jumping knee and knock him out. So I haven't really been into the MMA and getting into it now, though. It's a very different animal than regular boxing, though. Very exciting, though.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, all these fights in the MMA seem like, you know, any time somebody could get knocked right out from a jumping kick or a jumping knee, it's just, you know, it's a very exciting game.
You're finding that MMA is much more unpredictable than our boxing, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I always want
to
say, everyone in the show, thanks for having Chris. This is my cousin calling from New York. I appreciate it's great to have you on, my cousin.
It's great to be on.
I love it.
Does he owe you any money?
Cousin Chris. There it is. Cousin Chris.
Cousin Chris from the Bronx.
All right.
Run it.
Hey, Chris, spread the word in the Bronx for us.
Oh, I definitely will now.
Yep.
My cousin turned me on to your show and to a really good show.
Well, thanks for coming on, cousin. I love you. Tell the family I love you. Thank you.
You got it.
Hey, Bob,
thanks for having me.
What do you think about it? Okay. Have a nice night.
You too.
Take care, cousin.
Bob, what do you think about Jermaine Sterling's outing with Cotello?
Yeah, I didn't get to see that one either. I haven't really watched anything in the last couple of weeks. I apologize. But Sterling's a beast. There is, nothing else to say about Sterling other than he's a straight beast. Now, beating Cejudo, now Henry was a triple A or H or triple C, whatever they called himself there for a while. A phenomenal wrestler and retired a little early, a little premature, and then started, just talking trash from Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff for a while. So for Ellerman to take him out like that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Damn. You don't like Henry Cejudo?
No.
Oh, my God. Triple C.
I think he's a good athlete. I think, I don't like John Jones either. You know what I mean? But I can't argue that he's not the GOAT. You know, just as a person, I mean, I've never met the fellow. We've never hung out and had tea or coffee or crumpets. But you know what I mean? Just your off-stage performance to me says a lot, And again, I'm just against this whole new day and age where, back in my day, sticks and stones break your bones, but words will never hurt me. Today, it's just the opposite. Words will destroy people, it's all about this and that. You can't say this and that, but these certain guys get on the internet and just talk trash. Why can't you speak for yourself in the ring? Walk quiet and carry a big stick kind of thing.
But guess what else you see now? You see a lot more cha-ching, Sticks and stones may break your bones. Words may not hurt you, but words, they make cash. They bring in the payday. And I'm not going to knock Henry Cejudo, for doing what he does just to get a little bit of extra cash, get a little bit of extra that pay-per-view. But I was not expecting him to go out like that. Not like that. And it was sad seeing him lose. But I didn't watch most of the fight. I turned on maybe the first or second round, and I kind of just went to sleep after that. I remember it was just a little bit of a snooze fest, and I figured I'd just watch the highlights in the morning.
And you know what, guys, I totally agree. Getting humbled, sometimes you want to sell, market it. I remember when Dave Telesco fought Roy Jones, he was at ringside, like Mr. T, calling Roy Jones out, and he got the fight. So sometimes, you do what you have to do, but actions speak louder than words, Sometimes you just wind up getting humbled. So, you just do what you have to do to market
sometimes
yourself.
Sometimes it's satisfying to see, that justice being done to a certain extent. Somebody might talk themselves into it. Yeah.
Spot on.
It's
very
like
true.
Watching every Kobe Covington fight or watching every Greg Hardy fight. You like to see that guy get his ass beat.
Everyone loves it when somebody comes out in the ring and they're being extra flashy and they're doing one-handed cartwheels and they're talking the most trash at their weigh-ins, and then they go down within the first exchange. There's not a person alive that doesn't just love that. justice.
Why is Ric Flair a legend? Why is the Nature Boy a legend, right?
Woo!
There it is.
I was a big fan of Macho Man. Come on, Randy Savage. Oh, yeah, the Macho
there
Man.
It is. But Macho Man is another great example, right? Because people love heels, too. You either love them
or
you
he was great.
To get them.
Great athlete,
you know
too.
I mean?
Great athlete.
Y'all leaving out my generation is Randy Orton and John Cena, baby. Let's go.
Let's go.
Floyd Mayweather made more money than a little bit being a heel.
Oh, yeah. What's your guys' take on what happened this weekend with Floyd and with John Gotti's going
on? Yeah, that one, that's what I was going to bring up here shortly. I thought it was all just for numbers or something until I saw the YouTube video backstage during that. Was a crazy brawl.
It was bad. It was bad.
Funny, the best punch Floyd landed all fight was in the brawl. That's the best place to hit
exactly.
Gotti ran up on him. Floyd threw a hook, missed the hook. The Gotti started swinging. Floyd hit him with a right that backed him off. And I was like, that's the best punch you landed.
Well, now he's got all the death threats coming his way too. So
I was just about to say that. Was that like I don't know someone's wife in the family? Maybe it was like John Gotti's wife, something like that.
Yeah, you know what, man? And I'm sure if this were like the mid '80s, Floyd'd be scared to death. But you know, I mean,
not this
right
time.
Now,
age. Yeah, in the '80s, yeah. I would say yes. I can tell you for a fact. You
oh,
better
absolutely,
be careful.
Right? He'd be scared to death.
Trust me, guys. Trust me on that.
Absolutely. Actually, if it were the 80s, he wouldn't have fought. He wouldn't have fought.
I'll tell you what, old man Gotti was going out there, you know, by his bodyguard. He didn't look too happy.
No, he had some skills. Old man Gotti had some skills. You'd be surprised.
I don't know which Gotti it was. One of them was walking out of that ring, though, with a bunch of bodyguards, and he didn't look like one to mess with, I can tell you that.
No.
What's funny, though, is when young Gotti started his MMA career, I actually, was able to catch one of his fights on YouTube, and I thought he was, like, pretty promising. Obviously, because of his name recognition, he got this Floyd Money fight, which was probably his biggest payday. But, you know, like I like to see him continue his MMA career. It looked like something he was taking pretty seriously. So
he didn't even land. What's amazing is, you know, that fight I spoke to last night, Richard Schwartz, he's a great cut man from New York. I was actually going to have him come on. He had Iran the Blade Barker was going to call in, which would have been great. And he's a Bronx guy for me, so the Blade Barkley, tough guy, legit.
Yeah.
Great guy. I don't know if
awesome.
He was supposed to go to a weight, and you know him being from the Bronx and owning Tommy Hearns, the great legend Tommy Hearns, beating him twice. That was incredible. But he told me he said that what he seen last night, there was a guy live, and he knew that it was really scary that he was in the corner, like couldn't even get out. He was trapped. It was bad. He said it was really bad, that it was a literally legit brawl. Like, this wasn't no show act. It was an all-out brawl.
Yeah, that didn't look staged or for numbers to me. When I saw the videos of it, I was like, oh, shit. They tripping.
It's crazy to me how a multi-million-dollar person gets into a street riot. That's all I can say. That's kind of wild to me. Like, you have all of this money, and
I know.
You're getting into a street riot.
Right, like, money doesn't buy good judgment. That's the one thing we know.
I don't know. I'm saying to myself, is Floyd sometimes, like, really going above, you know, water? Is he, like, testing the waters here, you know? Like, because, you know, I looked at him. I was like, you know, I don't know what Floyd is what now, about 46?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right,
yes,
he's about 46.
Right.
Okay, you can tell, you look at him. Listen, as we get older, naturally, you know, I'm 51. You know, are we going to be as fast as when our 20s or 30? No. You know, the last thing that goes is our punching power. We always keep our power, you know, a punching chance, you know. But I looked at Floyd. I mean, you could tell he slowed down a little bit. Like, you know, even though he's great as he is, he slowed down, and I was like, wow. Like, and Kenny Bayless, that actually refs, Rich was telling me last night, because I asked him to call in, Kenny Bayless is a lot of his ref, and there was no judges, none. There was no reason for Kenny Bayless, even Richard Schwartz told me, for him to stop that, though. They should have let it go on.
It was an exhibition,
It was exhibition. Why stop it? You know, let him go. Let him go.
It was just exhibition. And he stopped.
I'm glad he did, though.
He stopped it. I mean, it wasn't the most entertaining affair, but he stopped it because they were talking too much trash. Like, really?
No.
They're punching
talk,
each other
though,
in the
like,
face.
You know, let it go.
Trash is too much. How much? You can't talk trash, but you can hit each other.
Yeah, and it was, and then all of a sudden, then he attacked him, and then that was it. That was when all bets were off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying to myself, wow, is this? I first thought maybe it's staged, and then I spoke to Richard, and he's like, no, Anthony. He goes, one of the guys, my assistant guys that does hand wraps, he was trapped in the corner.
Damn.
Yeah.
Not good.
No,
it's
not good at all.
Not
it was bad.
Situation.
It looked something like, you remember back in the days when Galata fought Riddick Bowe?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Oh, that was melee. That was an all out brawl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, literally Galata had to stay away and use his jab, but how many times he had Riddick Bowe beat and he low blowed him, and that was it.
Kept
and
doing
that was
it.
When the hell broke
he
loose.
He just couldn't stop hitting them in the twigs of berry.
His trainer told him to go specifically to the head.
His
and he
trainer
did it again.
Said, don't punch to the body anymore. He said, I'm not punching to the body. I'm punching to the twigs of berries.
He did. He did. And he just wasn't disciplined enough, Galata.
No.
He really wasn't.
Galata's problem was all mental because he was. I used to like Galata.
Yeah.
He was a good fighter.
No,
Galata was
good. He had talent. Galata. He was good.
Yeah.
He was.
But
good. The Lennox Lewis fight. He had a. I don't know what happened. At a nervous breakdown or something.
Mental.
I mean.
Yeah, it was always mental with him. Always mental.
Yeah, but to see that though remind me of. It was just a melee. So when I seen that brawl, it was like, it just reminded me. It took me back to Galata and Riddick Bowe when I seen the Mayweather and Gotti.
Let's
let Bob get some time in here. He's been studying up all night for a urine test, but a blood test. I hope he passes. Hey Bob, what do you think of Israel Adesanya? Saying that Whitaker doesn't deserve a third chance.
Well, not right away. I think he's waiting for the winner between him and his next opponent, July 6th. I saw something about that. I can't find it right in front of me right now, but
he's fighting DDP, the South African dude, and Adesanya has a beef with him because he said something that was true, but Adesanya took offense. He said, they claim to be African champions. He goes, but I'm the only true African champion. And obviously, you know, they were offended, you know, specifically Adesanya because he was born in Nigeria. But what DDP was saying in context was, yes, they were born here, but he lives and trains out of New Zealand and Australia. He's like, I was born in South Africa. I still live in South Africa, and I train in South Africa.
Right.
I wake up every morning and breathe African air. And he was right. But Adesanya, I think, just looking for another opponent, right? Use that as, like, I want him to win. But he doesn't think DDP is going to beat Whitaker. So that's the issue.
And you can see this happen over time. You see every once in a while, you know, there's going to be a period of time where there's going to be, you know, maybe 3-4 different champions in a span of 2 years. But then there's going to be a time where one guy comes along and dominates the division for long enough that he fights all of the competition, just waiting for new competition to come through. And this is one of those times. Israel Adesanya has cleared out the middleweight division, and he doesn't want to just fight the same names over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to start fighting new blood. You know,
new blood.
New opponents. See who can really test out his. You don't want to. fight the same guys and stay at the same level. You know, if you fight different guys, then that's the only way you can really gauge or not if you're getting better. You know what I mean? If you fight the same guy and beat him, then you're back to square one. You're back to where you are when you beat him last time. You haven't gotten
and you're
any better.
So right,
better.
Like, you're so right. It's all cyclical. Because remember when Anderson Silva owned a division for like 7 years? And then in a span of like 4 years, you know, you had Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold, Michael Bisbane, George St-Pierre. And now Adesanya has brought stability back to division. So that happens, all right? That happens in all divisions in both sports, in boxing and MMA. So you got to love it.
The easy remedy, so you have new opponents, and guys do this all the time, is they move up. Israel moved up one time before. I mean, he lost, but not, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to look for him to do that again.
But well, exactly right now, like, think about it. It's funny you talked about moving up. A light heavyweight division in UFC is in a state of flux that Caden was just talking about, really a state of flux ever since John Jones left, right? You had Yuri Prochazka, then he hurt him. Well, you had Dominic Reyes fighting for the title. He lost to Blachowicz, right? Then Blachowicz loses to Teixeira, who loses to Prochazka, who gets hurt, who then – now Hill, Jamal, like we've had four champions like in 3 years, right? So that's, man, it's part of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's back to what you're talking about, how, you know, nobody doesn't want to fight anybody. Like, especially nobody doesn't want to fight the champion. Who doesn't want to fight the champion? That's not only a bunch of money, but it's also a shot at getting a belt. So to say someone's scared of someone else, that's just another one of those, you know, what I like to call promotion talk, you know, fight promotion talk. It just smacks. You know, get the views up, get the money up. But no one who is no one who signed a contract to be a professional combat athlete is afraid of another professional combat athlete, at least in my mind. They shouldn't be, at least.
Okay. Caden, one of your favorite fighters, Shakur Rakhmonov, is coming up in 2 weeks. What's your thoughts on that one?
Shavkat Rakhmonov, who is he fighting?
He had a he just had a knockout.
Oh. That was a while ago, I believe, right?
Alex Pereira. And Adesanya, what's the story?
Okay, yeah. For the next fight is, I don't know, because they've already fought, what is it, like five times now? You know, or four times with Alex Pereira winning like four out of the five or three out of the four, whatever it is. But, you know, regardless of that, they are 1-1 against each other in the UFC. So they do need to settle this deadlock, at least in my opinion, I believe they should. Just because that's no fun. That's no fun, right? You can't have it go 1-1 and that's the story for the rest of their careers. Never gonna know who's the overall better fighter. So
Izzy said the only way the third fight happens is if Pajeda wins the UFC light heavyweight title. And you know Pajeda moved up and he's about to fight Jan Blachowicz. So,
yeah.
He's got a tough fight against Blachowicz.
Yeah, and I would say this, like, it's not going to happen, like you said, it's not going to happen right away. You know, that's not, that not only should it not be the immediate fight that happens right away, but it's just not going to happen because he moved up. And the only way that's going to happen will be for a double weight or a double champ position for Israel Adesanya, which would be written in the stars if you really think about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tony, here's your chance to redeem yourself with Orlando. Ryan Garcia tells Rolly Romero, let's get you off your ass, let's fight. What's the story?
Talk to Rolly Romero?
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Garcia will clean his clock, so that won't be anything. And I don't think Ryan's backed up by De La Hoya anymore. I think he went back to cross-dressing again. So I believe we might have an issue with him in management. Yeah, I'm going to say it how it is. He's wearing women's panties at the moment right now. He got all upset about this whole Garcia thing. So, So I don't know who's going to be managing Garcia, but if he fights Raleigh, Raleigh's going down face first like he did with Tank.
I definitely agree with that. Definitely.
As a public service announcement, anything of Anthony's mouth is not cleared by the management. Thank you very much. Any lawsuits,
yeah.
I will give you his address.
Yeah, hey, I'm close enough to Orlando. He'll be over there. We'll run into each other. He said hello. get a little red lipstick on me. It'll be all right.
Are those the new women's panties from Target?
Oh, yeah, man. The one Kim Kardashian's been pushing, you know? Skims.
Well, guys, we're up at against our time limit. In fact, I extended 20 minutes so that we could talk. But I appreciate everybody coming on tonight. Let's see. Have our guest lead us out. Anthony, you want to lead us out?
Yeah, I really want to thank everyone for having me on the show, and it was a pleasure and an honor to be with you guys tonight. And, you know, happy Father's Day to all of you, whoever's a fathers out there. And I thank you again, and I had an awesome time tonight on the show.
Great.
Oh, please come back, brother.
I really, you know, I got so much more and love the show and a lot more, so I really appreciate if you guys have me on, and it would be a pleasure, and I thank you again. And I do want to show a lot of love for everyone out here in Sarasota. I moved out here 3 years ago, and it's been nothing but fantastic for my children and I. And I want to show love for Linda, that's the mother to me, and all the other people, my cousins, and all people that I want to show love and respect for at CORE, Laura, Tara, all wonderful people that I met in my life. And I want to thank you again for having me on the show.
Okay. Caden?
You know, it's been a good couple of weeks since we've done this show, and, you know, just felt right, felt like I was at home, and everyone carried their weight, so it was just all in all great show, and a good newcomer on, did very well. I forgot your name. What's your name?
Yes,
my name is Anthony. I appreciate Anthony. It, brother. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on the show, man. But
and I thank you very much.
Anybody else who's a father, and I'll see you all on next weekend. Peace out.
Okay, Tony.
Peace out. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Anthony for coming on. Leo, I believe it was, Chris, the callers. That was awesome to have them listening out of the Bronx and chiming in. Love it. I'd like to say happy Father's Day to all you guys. I love all you guys, Frank, Caden, Bob, Ty, Z. You guys are like family. I've never met half of you, but we're all family. Father's Day, happy Father's Day to my ex-wives. You know, it's not your day, it's mine. It's to the second wife that has my child. It's my day, and I'm not like that, but it's my day. So
it is your day.
You had
you deserve every minute.
You got that right, brother. So love all you guys. Bob, love you, man. Don't break me in half when we meet. You know, we will catch you guys next week. I'm glad we were back because it's been a long 2 weeks. I was craving getting back on. So,
yeah. Hey,
well, thanks for having me on, guys. Thank you, Tony. Thank you very much.
And
you got
take
it,
care. God bless. It was great having you on, Caden, Ty, Z, Tony, Frank. Thanks for putting us all together, bringing this crazy lot together every week. It's great talking with you guys after having a couple of weeks off. Happy Father's Day to all of us fathers out there, and to the like Caden, the fathers that don't know their fathers, that could be getting a letter in the mail. So, God bless everyone. Keep those eyes up and chins down. We'll see you next week.
All right. God bless. Thanks, guys.
Another wonderful show. Good to be back. I want to thank Anthony for calling in, the Bronx Connection. I want to thank Tony.
Thank you, brother.
No doubt. I want to thank Tony.
All love,
Bob.
All love, brother.
thank Tony, Bob. I want to thank Kate and Ty, you, Butch, all of my Fighting Words family. If anybody wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call. Oh, these shows are another good. Dr. Fish, Bob, and Coach Town. Happy Father's Day.
Cheers.
And Ty.
First of all, big ups to Anthony, brother. Thank you for calling in and adding some knowledge to the hour. Very much appreciated.
Also, and my respect, brother.
Absolutely. Also want to thank Cuzzo Chris from the Bronx and Leo. Got to thank the guys that's been here. My guy Tony, Bob, Caden, Butch, Zito. Man, it's a pleasure being on. Forgive me for my lateness. It's a pleasure to say happy Father's Day to all you gentlemen, except Caden. Keep it wrapped up, my guy. Not yet.
Today,
so happy Father's Day. Everyone be safe and well.
Again, I want to thank everybody.
I hear you got three out there somewhere, buddy.
This program really came together almost 20 years ago with the assistance of Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Aaron and Aaron Jacob got these programs done. Monday would have been Bobby's 58th birthday. We wish him a very happy birthday. We know he's at the Golden Bridge with his uncles and his grandfathers and everybody else, and we appreciate that. It's a hell of a loss, but he left a hell of a memory for everybody. Yes, that's his name around the city. Anybody knew he was a deputy, knew he was a good guy. So we want to thank these programs are brought to you each and every night a week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of the Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please make sure you let them know that you know that they're there. These programs are dedicated to those who've lost their lives while on duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Kiazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Bainger, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Charlie Cohn at Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris LeVake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Anoffel Crispin, Lakeland PD, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Trooper Joe Bulk, Florida Highway Patrol, Chief Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Chief Al Hogan, Longo Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Blaine Lane, Polk County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Chris Meyer, Polk County Sheriff's Department, and Sergeant Christopher Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Sheriff's Department, and the University of Temple Police Department. My brothers and sisters, though you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you, may the winds be always at your back, may the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the palm of his hands. Good night, God bless, and happy Father's Day to all.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahezahilma, sona shene voratfet, hakuig again ma'ilma.
Huh? It was on me. I won. And they all love me. You can hear from the Bronx, baby. They all, you can tell. And
Shema Hey, Shema Hey.
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is responding to his last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed. Bob, we love you and we miss you.